Good afternoon and welcome to the 13th edition, unlucky for some, probably me today, of the Wolf Whistle podcast. We joined today, actually, this is a player I've been trying to get for a while because he's a good mate of mine and he's a great speaker, very, very funny. Now, he literally called me this morning and says, "Jase, what are you doing today? I'm free. I want to do this podcast." And that's literally how it went. He's just got here to Wolf Whistle Towers. It's Mickey Holmes. 104 appearances for the Wolves in all gold and black, 13 goals, signed in 1985 and was with the club till 1988. Mickey, how are you?
I'm fine, mate. I'm lovely to see you.
Lovely to see you as well, Mick, because you are one I was very keen to get on because you've got a record at Wolves which no one has broke, and we're going to come to that in a bit.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that. But really, you were your first professional club was Bradford City.
Yeah.
But where did it all start before that?
When I was 14, I signed for Notts Forest.
Yeah.
With Roger Ely and Liam Robinson, who went on to play for Bury and Burnley. And I was there for 2 years, and unfortunately, obviously, we didn't have mobile phones, so I got a phone call just as I was leaving school off Mick Rayner saying, "The club's released you, you're too small." And they took Des Walker instead of me. What a great decision.
What position did you play then?
I was right back at Forest.
Okay.
Played right back at Notts Forest, and it was heartbreaking.
Did you play with Des?
No. They signed him instead of me.
Right.
So obviously he's got a clue, Mr. Clough.
Yeah.
And that was it. So I was heartbroken because I didn't have a club to go to. I was 16. I'd just finished school. My school went downhill because, as most kids think, they're going to make a living in professional football.
Yeah.
And it's a hard... It's hard once you get released. Obviously, my mother brought five kids up, so I had no one to turn to because my mum didn't know about football.
Okay.
So basically, it was just go and work. So I went to work for 6 months, and it was full enough. Bradford City.
What job did you go and do?
I was working in a computer place.
Okay.
Don't ask me how I got that, but I must have fanned it.
Fluke the interview.
She must have fancied me. Anyhow, got that job, and Bradford City, they were going to an under-18 final in the Northern Intermediate League. When Don Goodman played. So they was asking for the best 11 players in Bradford to go and play in a reserve match. And that was it. Played in there, and then played with Terry Orifer, who was assistant manager.
Yeah, ex-Wells manager.
Yeah.
Leeds.
And Leeds were my team at the time.
All right.
I was supported as a kid, and then played another 2 or 3 games, and that was basically it. They offered me a non-contract to end the season, well, apprenticeship,
yeah,
to end the season, and then the following season, when there was only one substitute, I broke into the first team, and we beat Hull, which is a local derby, and we won the league that year.
And what was your position back then, Mick?
I was centre midfield when I, because obviously I'd. And this is no lie, I just started drinking Guinness. I thought it was a wife's tale. Someone said, "Drink Guinness." I just put weight on my legs, you know, built myself up.
Yeah, so you actually got bigger. So, obviously, Brian Clough...
Well, my missus wouldn't say that, but
that's one for another podcast. So Brian Clough basically said you wasn't big enough. And I suppose that did have an effect on you, and you had to go out then and obviously prove to yourself and sort of make yourself bigger, if you like. So you got your opportunity at Bradford, and what was Don like to play with? Because obviously Don played for Wolves later in his career. What was Don like back then?
Don was a great lad. Me and Don, we actually went on tour together, under-18s, to Germany.
Yeah.
And the funny thing, on the same day, I think Don made his debut, got a hat-trick for the first team, and I got a hat-trick for the under-18s in the same. Obviously completely different, but
yes.
Terry wasn't happy giving me the match ball because I complained to him.
Really?
And that was basically it, and then... obviously, we played in first team together, me and Don. My contract was up. Went out to Germany for the same tournament previously.
Yeah.
Got 8 goals in that. Come back. And while I was away, this is amazing, Leeds United were interested in me.
And they were your club?
Were my club, Eddie Gray.
And you'd have walked to Leeds, I take it.
Yes. And then Jimmy Lumsden. So obviously, the club must have heard about something because they won't release me. They won't release my registration. I got a phone call out of the blue from Martin Buchan, and he said, "You can go play in Sweden for 3 months." that was just when the season started. Yeah. So I went out with a lad called Andy Kilner, who was Stockport manager, who played for England boys.
Yeah.
Big time Charlie, because he played for England.
Right.
Went out to Sweden. Best time in my life. Some ugly women out there.
Yeah.
Really, not very nice.
This isn't being broadcast out to Sweden, so we are safe to say that.
I hope, because they're beautiful women in Sweden. And so when I come back, guess who got the sack? Eddie Gray.
So that was...
While I was in Sweden, Eddie Gray got the sack, so I thought, there we go again.
That's the end of that.
That's the end of that. And then Tommy Kavanagh, obviously, who took Martin Buchan's job at Burnley, must have heard the good things about me in Sweden. So he asked me to come to Burnley. So I went, that's where Andy Kilner was from. So I went to Burnley with Andy Kilner. And after 2 weeks, playing it was just on trial,
I got
a phone call from Sammy Chapman. And who was up there training on loan was Jeff Palmer.
Yes.
On the Tuesday. So I got a phone call of Sammy Chapman, must have seen me in reserves, and he said, mate, I want to play Saturday in first team with Andy King, who's a legend, against Cardiff. I said, well, what do I do? Have you signed anything? I said, no, I'm just on trial. He said, go and ask Tommy Kavanagh for a 2-year contract. I went, anyhow. Goes into Tommy Kavanagh. Not the door, a young lad. I went, hi, Tommy, mate. I said, you know, I've been on trial. I think I'm good enough, you know, to get a contract. I'd like a 2-year contract. I said, not a problem. Just sign there.
So it almost backfired a little bit.
So I've gone back on the phone to Sammy Chapman.
Said, I've got one.
He said, he's offered me a contract 2 years. He said, ask for a 3-year. Tommy, what? Sammy Chapman, the funniest bloke I've ever met. Hilarious. What a lovely man.
God rest his soul. God
rest his soul. So he said, go back in. So I'm petrified now. I mean, Tommy Kavanagh, we used to be at Man U. So I've gone back in and I've knocked on the door. And I'm bricking it. And I went, Tommy, you know, I think 2 years ain't enough. I need 3 years because obviously Burnley. He said, well, you only live down the road in Bradford. He said, you've been tapped up, haven't you, son? I mean, he said, go on, fuck off. Sorry for swearing.
No, don't worry. Yeah.
And next thing, I rang Sammy Chapman up on the Wednesday night and I said, he's let me go. Brilliant, got the registration on the Thursday morning, went to Wolves. Jeff Palmer was there and I'd seen him on Tuesday. He didn't make sense why we're there. And I signed for the Wolves on the Thursday, not realising about the history, not really realising how bad the club had gone down. I'd just seen Wolves and first team.
Yeah.
That's all I did.
And as a young man, you wanted to play, didn't you?
Yeah. And I knew Wolves were a big club.
Yeah.
When I got there, it did open my eyes. You know, you hear Steve Bull and Andy Thompson say it, but it wasn't just them. It was me who's going to... Remember, 6 months ago, I could have been playing for Leeds United.
Yeah.
And that's how it backfired.
And you've gone to Molineux, and we had Andy on the podcast recently, and he said how bad it was. But from your point of view, Mick, well, what were you walking into?
It was bad, but not as bad as I thought, because all I was thinking is first team football. And you're asking a young kid at that age, when you've been out to Sweden, your career hasn't even started.
Yes.
And you just want to play first team football. And playing for the Wolves, and you know, which the biggest club I've ever played for, which I love.
Yeah.
It's the best club.
Would you still class it as your club?
Oh, Wolves is my club now. Yeah. It's just as a young kid.
Yes.
I supported Leeds United, because obviously Bradford Leeds is next.
Of course.
But no, Wolves is my club, and I loved my time with it, and then making my debut with Andy King. And I honestly thought, God, football's easy. Obviously, not knowing that it was my first game. Do you know what I mean? I
must have been on
the hype, you know, in first team. And that was it. So he signed me. And then after 6 months, he offered me, I could have signed a 4-year contract with Sammy. He asked me.
Yeah.
I was naive. I didn't know what, you know what I mean? It wasn't bad money. There was no money. Well, it wasn't bad money, but it wasn't the best money, but it was not what we're on about today. And then I signed a 3-year contract.
So you made your debut. Cardiff away, as you said. That year wasn't the best year for Wolves. At the time, there was a third division club. Yeah. That was the 85-86 season. They sadly got relegated. But you was playing on a regular basis, weren't you, Mick?
I was, yeah. And it was great playing with Andy King. God rest his soul as well.
Yeah.
Learning so much off him. Great player. And you know, when you look round and you think the players at Bradford and Wolves, no, some of the players weren't up to scratch.
Of course.
But Sammy did his best.
Yeah,
dragging players in and whatever, you know.
And he had his sons play for the club, Campbell and Cavan.
Campbell and Cavan, brilliant lads.
Yeah.
Brilliant set of lads. I mean, the crowd got on the back because, again...
The dad's the manager.
The dad's the manager. They couldn't do right for wrong. They've always got the blame. And basically...
You're only playing because your dad's in charge and...
You know, and what... I mean, Campbell, when I first joined, he made me feel so welcome.
Right.
Campbell wasn't a big drinker. Well, we wasn't then.
Yeah.
But it used to take us Rockies. You know, just show us out where the bars are. We soon found out where they were.
We've been at the problem was then getting you out of them.
Hey, as long as we were out by Wednesday afternoon, that was all right. But that was basically it. And but as I said, great set of lads. The dad was absolutely brilliant. And unfortunately, I think he got the sack at the end of the season.
Yeah, when they got relegated.
When they got relegated. And then I think Brian Little took over.
And that was the 86-87 season. Now that season, Wolves got to the playoffs. You're once again a regular. They lost in the playoffs to Aldershot, and you played in both legs, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, we had Brian Little got the sack. Great manager. And then Graham Turner come in.
Yeah.
And I was in and out of the team, sub, and then he was getting a lot of stick from the fans.
So.
And then he put me in, and I got the record. I scored in 7 goals in 7 games, which I today saved his job.
Well, that record, so you have scored a goal in 7 consecutive games, and those games were, from memory, because I don't write things down and read from a script, Crewe home on January the 31st, then it was Stockport home, Burnley away, Aldershot home, Northampton home, Preston away, and then Colchester home on March the 3rd. So in literally a little over a month, you'd scored 7 in 7. The game after, sadly, you didn't get a goal, but the game after that you did, so you scored 8 in 9. Now, that 7 in 7 is going to be such a difficult record to beat, and I say that because Bolly didn't even do it, you know. And what position was you playing at that point, Mick?
Centre midfield.
So you'd scored 7 in 7 from centre midfield. I mean, that is a fantastic record at any level. And I know recently, I think it was last season or the season before, was it Jota or Jimenez scored in 5 consecutive games or 6 maybe?
It's the one who's Carbonity?
I know there was...
he scored 6 in 6, Carbon type or something.
Oh, yeah, it's all right. I know there was a player who'd scored... Yeah, it was 6 in 6, that's right. And I think your record, obviously, was on the verge of getting... But that just shows how difficult it is at any level. So for you to do that, Mick, you are in the history of Wolves. And, you know... And that was at a time... it was, like you said, difficult times at the club. So to do that from centre midfield, I mean, are you proud of that record, Mick?
Oh, amazing, because I was having a laugh with, I forgot his name, works for Sky.
Johnny Phillips?
Johnny Phillips, he rang me up a couple of years ago and said, not one of them from a penalty.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's open play, so if you're the striker and your penalty taker, it might be a little bit more easier.
Yeah.
Last 2 years ago, when it nearly got broken, or last year, I was bricking it.
Were you?
Oh, yeah, it's the proudest moment. I mean, record for Wolves. You know, I don't care what division it is, what era or whatever, it's still a lovely achievement I've got. So
incredible. Now, would you say, obviously that's from centre midfield, like we said, you scored 8 goals that season. So in that spell, in that 9-game spell, you scored all your goals for the season. Was you going into matches with a sky-high confidence, thinking, I'm going to score today?
Oh, yeah. Me confidence was that high.
Yeah.
And I was a confident player. And it was all down to Gary Pendry.
Okay.
Gary Pendry made me feel so up there when I went out.
Yeah.
Best player. And that's... And it's true, it's all about confidence in football.
Yeah.
Once a manager doesn't like you or whatever, or, you know, doesn't give you the vibes that he wants you to play, or, you know what I mean? You lose total... Well, you should have it in strength, but it's a lot down to confidence in football. And Gary Pendry gave me that. You know, there was midfielders trying to come in and get him a position, and unfortunately, I just kept my place. Because when Graham came in, he had a little bit more money to buy some more players.
Yeah.
You know, and they bought some players. I mean, you know, we've got some great players. Robbie Dennison, as I said, obviously Steve Bill.
Yeah.
Mutchie.
Yeah. You know, so the season after that, so that was the 86-87. The season after that, 87-88, is when it really, really took off. And when things started to gel together, and you know, the goals that obviously Steve and Andy scored, you was chipping in, was phenomenal. And in that season, where we won the fourth division, you played 30 games, Mick. So you was a big part of that.
Unfortunately, I was. But the second game, we played Notts County in the cup, and Jeff Pike broke my arm, actually smashed it, had a plate in it, so I was out for till Christmas.
Right.
So that was it was funny, I was at Lillishall, and they're taking the mickey out of me because all I'm doing is like that with my hands in the window.
Yeah.
And everyone's got broken legs and everything. And so that was 6 months, and funny, Jan Mulby. So I was one of the fittest running.
Yeah.
We're doing an 8 mile run. Next minute, Jan Mulby will jump out of bushes and pretend he's been running with me. Character. And that was it. And then I got back at Christmas and I had to wear a cast.
Yeah.
And my confidence wasn't there at the moment because he started putting me wide right. And if everyone knows, I'm not the quickest, but my work rate.
So I
was playing wide right when I got back in. So I got back in just after Christmas, and then I played every game from then up till we got promoted and won the Sherpa Fan.
Now, once again, that season we gelled on the pitch. We was destroying teams for fun. Every game we went into knowing we could win, and we was winning. So we actually, you know, we walked the fourth division. You just touched upon the Sherpa Fan. Now, in that competition, you'd played in every round. Mm-hmm. We got to the final. I mean, firstly, what was that like as a Wolves player at the time? What was that game like to play in and the occasion with 50,000 Wolves fans out of an 80,000 against the team, actually, that Burnley, you've been on trial at?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was amazing. I mean, before that, we played in the Mercantile.
Yeah.
Which was every top two clubs played each other at Wembley. It was only 25 minutes each way.
Yeah.
That was an experience. But then to play...
Against Everton, wasn't it, as well?
Against Everton, yeah.
Yeah.
Robbie Dennison scored a cracker,
actually. A worldie, didn't he, yeah?
And then to play again, and you could not believe it, the fans, you know, it's just a dream come true.
I mean, what's it like walking out? Because at Wolves at the time, the crowd... When you first joined the club and in the relegation season... The crowds were obviously dipped seriously, but you knew what a big club it was. But I think it was probably that day you realised how big it was when they're getting 50,000 people to London for that game.
Oh, massive. I mean, you knew it took a massive dip, but the fans were coming every week. We're getting more fans. You know, it was just getting bigger and better. And obviously, that season, you could say that Wolves were on their up because the fans were backing us. And do you know what I mean? And we had, obviously... The better you do, the more money the manager's got to spend on players.
Yes.
And that's how it all spiralled.
And sadly for you, although it was a great experience playing at Wembley, it didn't end that great, did it, for you, Mick?
It didn't. And unfortunately, it was 3 months, 2 months before we played Swansea. And Graham Turner called me and he said, are you all right for next year? You know, contract. We didn't have agent. I went, of course, I've just bought a house in Cottle.
Yeah.
I love the club.
Yeah.
He said, right, not a problem. He said, do you get appearance money? I went, yeah. I said, yeah. He said, well, I'll put you on the bench today. We more or less won the league then.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? So basically, I didn't even think about it. And obviously played at Wembley. I'll never forget this. After 25 minutes, I twisted me. Paul Comstead, God bless him.
Yeah, God, sadly passed away. Yeah, yeah.
Lovely lad. But he caught my ankle. So I went over on it. And next thing, I come off. I think the physio was Paul Darby.
Yeah, Paul Darby.
And I'm there, not fans. And he's rubbing my leg and said, don't bottle it, Mick. And what? It's the biggest day in my life. Well, I don't know where he got it from.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I got back on the pitch. But with an ankle ligament, I can run straight.
Yes,
but
we can't.
But once you turn...
That's it.
So the ball got played over my head in those days. If you was injured, you were still keeping him on the side.
Yeah.
And when, with such a crunch, honestly, I was in agony. But I had to crawl off the pitch, so I wasn't keeping him on the side. And that was it. Then obviously at half time you could see the swelling coming up really bad. And God love Jackie Gallagher, he gave me a piggyback round the pitch, you know, to celebrate the winning.
Brilliant.
And that was best day of my life.
Did Jackie come on for you?
No.
Who?
I can't remember.
Because obviously you've
Ali
gone
Robertson
off.
Got injured as well. Me and Ali got injured.
What was the score when you come off? Is it 0-0 still?
0-0, yeah.
Yeah.
So they missed me again.
But, I mean, obviously, this is what I wanted to ask. Have you still got your medals?
I don't know where they are.
Really?
Really. Don't know where. Because I moved house quickly from Wolverhampton. You know, you've got them, you put them in boxes. Can't find them anywhere.
If you've bought a house in Codsall, there's an appeal now, because if you go in your loft, you might find a fourth division winner's medal and a Sherpa Van winner's medal as well.
Well, unfortunately, you won't, because when I went back to look at my house, I've made it into a co-op.
Right, so if you've been to the co-op and how obviously you got released Then yeah, so you make...
me and my wife come back on the team bus, the first team bus.
Right.
And there was a parade the next day.
Yeah.
So obviously I had to go straight to hospital. Anyhow, I mean, I had the operation done. The Monday, they're going round, or celebrating round Wolverhampton. I got a phone call, David Inston. I went, hi, mate. I said, hi, thinking, asking him, I'm all right. He said, have you heard the news? I went, no, what? He said, well, can I tell you, but you can't let anyone know. I went, so David Inston knew. He said, what's that? He said, they'll give you a free transfer. I went, what?
And to find that out from a journalist.
That is, you know, it's the worst thing in the world. You know, you listen to TalkSport, how it comes to be. Find out where you're in hospital with a broken leg. Best day in your life one day. Next day, you've just been given a free transfer. And it wouldn't happen today because they've got to keep you on. You know what I mean?
Of course. Is, so. But so you was out of contract.
Yeah.
So they'd literally, Graham took, really made the decision. But so why and how did the media find out before the player?
You tell me. Don't know till this day, and nothing's been said about it. And what, but you know, I've met Graham a few times, asked him, and he said, "Oh, did I really give it up?" You know, and you think, "Don't be."
Did it hurt, Mick?
Oh, it killed. It was a big, well, put it this way, my career went bump since I left Wolves. I just wanted to play for Wolves, and then I used to meet Andy Mutch when I went to Huddersfield for a drink, but it wasn't the same because you got the. You moved to Codsall, you love the area, you yeah. love the club, and it's just like someone sticking a knife in the back of you. And if I want to do so well for him, fair enough. It happens in football.
Yes.
You get released, managers come and go. We all know that. That's part and parcel of football. But for me, I mean, luckily, a month later when I'm still injured, Huddersfield rang me and wanted me to sign. But, you know, I was still injured. I didn't play for another 3 months and they signed me.
To be honest, Mick, I think with yourself, you are quite a versatile player. I know your strength is obviously centre of the park, but... You've said yourself, you started at right back, centre midfield, right wing. You had a goal scoring record in that spell of a striker. Sometimes when a manager, I mean, do you feel this? Sometimes when a manager sees you being able to play in different positions, sometimes that can actually be a weakness.
It can, but obviously further on the line. After Huddersfield, Dave Smith bought me. And
yeah.
Paid $50,000. And then another manager, Carlisle, bought me again. And they loved me centre midfield. And the confidence, they said, just give it to him. Do you know what I mean? So that's the difference about managers.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, Owen Hand was manager of Huddersfield Town. I didn't get back, when did May, June, July, September, 4 months out, you know, to get back in the first team at Huddersfield. And I only played a handful of games and I didn't see eye to eye with him.
Before Graham made the decision to obviously release you, what was your relationship like with him before that, when you was playing and you know, obviously scoring goals and contributing? What was your relationship like with him?
He just kept himself to himself, to be honest, to give you a rollicking, whatever. Gary Pendrell was the main man who kept the players ticking. I remember when I scored the 7-7 and we had Central TV come to interview me.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't let him do it.
Really?
Wouldn't let him do that to me. Saying me too big for me. I'm not that kind of person anyhow.
Of course. People who know you, Mick, certainly.
He wouldn't let me do that. And then it was just, it wasn't really, I don't think anyone had a relationship with him. It was like a bullet. It was going back for the throwback, the lads, Simon Osborne, the managers might have changed later on in the careers.
Yes.
But it was more of a bully tactic. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, where, do this, you're going to get told what to do. But there were no basic coaching.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? No one coaching. So no, you can never say he made Steve Ball. Steve Ball made himself.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Just natural, wasn't he?
It was natural. And do you know what I mean? So there were no really, it's like every team we used to do set players and everything. Everybody was there. But from a coaching side, I don't, no, not really.
So after Wolves, we will come back to Wolves, by the way, but then it was Huddersfield, Cambridge, Rochdale, Torquay. I want to touch on Torquay because you got to a final at Wembley.
Yes, I did.
And you played with a certain Dean Edwards.
Yeah, me and Dean. I went on loan from Rochdale to Torquay for a month and then obviously put an offer in for me and I signed for Torquay and Dino were down there. And that's when I met Matt Elliott, who became my brother-in-law.
Yes, I was going to say you've got some football family connections,
and then we ended up getting in the playoffs.
Yeah,
I'm playing at Wembley, but again, it's same as Wolves. We used to have have a few drinks on a Tuesday. Team bonding, talking. Yeah. We was in the Daily Mirror as a Heineken 7.
The Heineken 7. Yeah, so he's gone from scoring in 7 consecutive games to the Heineken 7.
Because it just went, if we were the manager, if we were a drinking team, we'd be top of the league by Christmas. And that's true. And every player went out, but yeah. We did the business on the park.
Yes.
And if someone got hurt, we'd make sure that someone would go and hurt the other person. And that was team bonding.
So that playoff final for Torquay, you and Dean both scored, didn't you?
Yeah, Dean scored a penalty in normal time.
Yep. Because he come off injured. No, did he come off injured or he come off? I remember because I remember doing the podcast and he said he come off, but you scored as well.
Yeah, so it went to 2-2 after full time, then it went to extra time,
yeah,
and then penalties.
Yeah,
and I ended up taking a penalty and scoring enough, and then we won it.
And what's that like to score at Wembley? I bet the regret is for you, I suppose. You wished you could have had that opportunity for Wolves in. But what was it like to score a goal at Wembley?
Oh, brilliant! I mean, you think you'd never play again when you play for Wolves.
Yeah.
Obviously, at the time when you play for Wolves in the final, you think, I'm going to play there again for Wolves.
Yes.
I never thought that day that this was the end of Wolves. Do you know what I mean? Because it wasn't a case of down to money.
Of course.
Because there was no money in the game anyhow.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? And I go back to Graham, and people say to me when I've been around the grounds, or Graham, no, I don't really get on with him. No, because the day I bought a house in Wolverhampton, I love that area, and he killed my dream, basically.
So you made it your home, and from your point of view, at Wembley, you started. So that's you obviously pretty much, you think, you know, you play 30-odd games that season, you do feel like you're figuring in his plans, and then at the end you find out you've got to leave the club. And this is, like you said, Mick, you'd have probably played there for nothing, wouldn't you? Do you know what I mean?
Totally agree. And, you know, it's not like being bitter because I'm not, it's like that. I love Wolves, but any other manager, we've had fallouts and you just move on. But Wolves were a bigger club than just moving on.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? From any other team.
Of course.
You know.
And it was a bit, and like you said, you've made the area your home. Obviously, you've resettled your family there.
And that's when you sort of become a journeyman. But they look at it, you know, I would have stayed at Wolves all my career.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you leave Rochdale. Well, I've left Rochdale. I'm not sad.
Yeah.
But I leave Wolves, it breaks my heart.
Yeah.
That's the massive difference. So leaving one club to go to another. And I ended it at 27. I thought, hang on a minute, I'm going to try and earn some money. Because up until that point, we didn't earn any money in those days.
I mean, if you don't mind me asking, Mick, because I do ask this player, mainly to the players that played in the 80s, what sort of money was you on, can you remember?
At Wolves, 250. And then at Carlisle, 1150.
Really?
But they bought me, see? So that's the difference. I'm more in the bargaining power, and they bought me on transfer deadline. And the funny... If you want me to tell the story, so I went up on the train, transfer deadline from Torquay.
Yeah.
The manager called me in. He said, what do you want? I said, I want 25 grand signing on. Not even thinking I'd get a chance.
Yeah.
1,500.
So you was hoping then he'd just counter offer
him? Yeah, and he did. And he went, well, I'll give you 15 signing on.
Yeah.
And I'll give you 1,100. So I've rang Wes. At Torquay.
West Saunders,
I said, Torquay's getting 50 grand for me. If the chairman don't give me a couple of grand in my pocket, I'm not going.
Yeah.
And he did.
So the chairman...
At Torquay.
Paid you as well.
Give me 2 grand for going. But it wasn't until that stage in my life...
That you started earning some money.
That I'm starting it, and I wanted to earn some money.
Yeah, of course.
But, you know, up until Wolves, Huddersfield, it was just more than the average person.
Yeah, so... 250 quid a week, and what was there an appearance money goal bonus?
£50 appearance.
£50 appearance, was there a goal bonus?
No.
See, you'd in that purple patch, you could
have been a millionaire, wouldn't I?
You'd have probably scored 12 in 12.
It's again, it goes back to the players. We didn't have the agents.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't, and people have a go at agents, but I wish I would have had an agent.
I think, Mick, if you go back to that era as a Wolves fan, he's one of my favourite eras, and like I said, the players there was no airs and graces in terms of they just wanted to play football. There was a young, hungry team that was getting results, and you could see the club developing. And you know, it was for me, it was when the money really started coming into Wolves that they did make some different decisions. And I think the players that were signing then, i.e. yourself, were just good, honest players who wanted to get the ball down and play and do the best they could.
Yeah. I totally agree with you, but it's like I said, it's changed now. And I've always said, never forget where you come from.
Yeah.
And always be humble. And when we play the charity matches with you, Jason, and someone asks for your autograph, it's amazing. It's humble. Of course. It's great to be there and be part of it and give something back to the game.
Yeah.
Where, unfortunately, nowadays, a lot of players are just in it for money. And they don't give a lot back, and they're not bothered.
Yeah.
And we was talking the other day, I imagine in 20 years, they might well be an ex-Wolves, because I can't imagine them all coming over from Portugal.
Look, with the Wolves All-Stars, because I do want to touch upon that, it's been documented Mel was struggling to get players. Now we're lucky that we've got a lot of former players, but you're quite right. The worry now is in 20, 30 years' time, who's going to come back and play, who's... You know, and you know, obviously, you know, you do voluntary anyway, but, you know, who's going to come? I just think it's going to go full circle again and we're going to start struggling. So to get you guys, I mean, the last game we played, 14 former first team players come down, and that was amazing. But it's good for you, isn't it? Because you get to catch up with all the old boys and...
It's great. And the thing is, I've never met him before, Simon Osborne, Carl Henry. What a lovely bloke.
Yeah.
So never prejudge anybody what the crowd think until you get to meet someone.
Well, exactly.
And it's meeting those lads. And you're a bit nervous because they're just finished.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
And who are you? We're all time. Do you know what I mean? But it's going to get like, but they're a great set of lads.
To be honest, it would have been in your favour if Carl Henry hadn't turned up because he was down to start.
I know. Carl took my place. And he had a mare, didn't he?
Yeah, Mel got it wrong. Did you, when you was playing football, Mickey, did you class football as a job? Because, you know, it's you get up in the morning, you go to work. Did you class it as a job, or did you feel humbled that you're getting paid for your passion?
Like you said earlier, I would have played for Wolves for now. I would have done it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I love the game of football. And going back to ours, that's all you knew was football. You played it every day. You played for your town, your county. You know, from a young age, that's all you knew is football.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously your education went out of the way, and that's it. So luckily, you know, a lot of people say to me, he was unfortunate, he was injured at 16. No, they weren't, because he didn't have the right attitude. And we can laugh and sit here about we all used to go on the drink.
Yeah.
But we worked damn hard through that week. Do you know what I mean? Everybody says we like to do, well, we did. But yeah. I tell you, Wednesday, Thursday, if you didn't have a game, on the Tuesday, you ran your socks off.
Yeah.
So you was fit anyhow. You know what I mean? It wasn't a case of, you know... players have got it easy, whatever. You've got to work hard. And that's basically how I looked at it. Just work hard, get your head down and just... And obviously, when you get older, you answer back to your managers.
Yeah.
You don't give a damn, because when I'm really left Wolves, I won't... I wasn't as in love with football as I should have been.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It just...
Do you think leaving Wolves, when you did and how you did especially, do you think it did knock a bit of passion out of it for you?
Oh, yeah. Killed me. I mean, honestly, nobody knows how much it hurt.
Mm.
But I mean, I suppose when the rest of the lads did leave Wolves, they'll realise. Because I think I didn't leave because I wanted to, or people leave because they think the grass is greener, but it's not, because it's such a big club.
I think sometimes when the decision's made for you, if you can say, look, I'm retiring now, or, you know, yeah, I've had enough, I'm looking to da da da. But when the decision's made for you, I think it makes it a bit harder, because we just got promoted at that point, and I know, Mickey, that you still had a lot to give, didn't you?
I did. I mean, obviously it was a bad injury, but obviously I would have got back.
Yes.
You know, after 4 months, but it's harder going to another team when you don't know anybody.
Of course.
But at Wolves, obviously, you know everybody, even if they were bringing new players in.
And he took rooting. You know, you was on, say, 250 quid a week, etc. It's not a great deal of money. Then you got to move your family to the other side of the country.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, unfortunately, good job I didn't buy a house. I kept my house in Birmingham at the time.
Yeah.
But I was only at Huddersfield for 3 months.
And that is the unglamorous side of football. Yes, everyone knows that you've played in front of thousands and thousands of supporters, but that is the unglamorous side, isn't it? The instability, the constant change and...
Oh, I totally agree. And again, it's down to managers.
Yeah.
I mean, like Dave Smith bought me from Torquay. He loved the way I played, gave me confidence. Unfortunately, he got the sack. So what does that tell you? Then Aidan McCaffrey bought me at Carlisle. He got the sack. And then, obviously, Dave McCreary come in.
Yeah, ex-Newcastle.
Because Michael Knighton was the chairman.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He'd become the chairman.
Yeah. Who'd done the kick-ups on the pitch at Old Trafford? Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Dodgiest man in football. How he right. got that to be a chairman.
Yeah.
Obviously, he seen my wage bill. The wage bill wanted rid of me.
Yeah.
So Dave McCreary one day had a go, and I said, I can't believe you've come from Man U, and all you want to do is kick it 50 yards. Because I wanted to get it down and play football, but that was it.
And he was a bit of a long ball merchant.
Coming from Man U, you wouldn't expect that.
No.
But they're all scared of the jobs, which is totally agree. They just want to win. It's about winning matches.
Yeah.
Anyhow, we had a fallout, and obviously my wages. Michael Martin had told him he wants to get rid of me.
Yeah. See, what was you on? 1,100, did you say?
Yeah.
So 1,100 quid a week. So Michael Martin comes in, he looks at the wage bill. Mickey Holmes, one of the highest earners.
Yeah.
So.
And unfortunately, that year I had the car crash anyhow.
Well, I was going to come on to that. You retired at 29 from the professional game, Mickey.
Yeah.
Because you did. You had a very suffered a bad back injury in a car accident. Is that right?
Yeah. I was living in Birmingham, and unfortunately, God rest my brother, who died two years ago.
Yeah.
He lent me his Vauxhall Vectra.
Yeah.
Quite a big car.
Yeah.
And I had an XR2.
Yeah.
Being a little poser, footballer. That's what we had. Yeah. And he lent me to go up to Carlisle, but it's quite a big car.
Yeah.
And I'm on the third, just in Stafford actually, on the motorway. An articulated lorry come in the middle near me, had a blowout, went straight into me. I was doing about 80 miles an hour, crashed me into the barriers. And that was basically, I thought I were dead. But if I wouldn't have had his car,
I would have been dead.
An XR2 would have just crushed it completely.
Oh, so.
So that's that was the end of me and my back. I was out for two, three, longer than that, and then obviously that was basically it.
And that's what a short career is. I mean, you're on the way to Carlisle then, so this is football, isn't it? You're playing at Torquay, and then you've got your transfer to Carlisle. I mean, it literally, you couldn't get any further away. And then, once again, it's always on the flip of a coin, then you have that terrible car accident, and you retired at 29, then you're in the big wide world then, aren't you, Mick?
You're in the big wide world, and unfortunately, Phil Chard rang me at Northampton. They were struggling after the crash, about 4 or 5 months after, and I said, I can't play, my back's gone. And he said, I'll just offer you something. So obviously I'm thinking my mortgage.
Of course, you still got bills to pay.
So I signed for him just for about 6 games.
So did you have any, I mean, did you have any cover? Once you'd had the car accident, did you have any cover from the, I don't know, the PFA or any insurances that helped you?
No, obviously took him to court and I got paid, well, another, this is a good story. So me and my friend Ian Dalziel, who was at Carlisle, we're going down to London, Satchi and Satchi.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was broke, and I rang my bank manager. I said, he knew I was getting a payout, but he didn't know when.
Yeah.
I said, can I put me in overdraft limit? You know, going in London, I want to be. He said, I'm sorry, it's up to its limit. Anyhow, there's no lie, an hour later, my solicitor rang me. He said, they've made you an offer of 60 grand. I went, right. So I rang my wife, and I said, and obviously you don't take your first offer.
Of course.
But remember, I'm in London, and I'm skint. So, <it's>, so, well, 15 minutes later, I said, no. So he rang me back an hour later, said 75 grand. Now, if I go to court and don't win, you don't get those charges, you know what I mean? So it was a big decision.
It is, so, huge.
And then I said, yeah. I said, well, I accept it. Can you ring my bank manager up now? I rang my bank manager within an half an hour, the bank manager's on the phone. Oh, Michael, you can have what you want.
Yes, sorry, mate.
I'll come round and see you on Monday.
I bet you will.
I said, come round and see me more. Monday morning, I rang him up, and I won't swear.
Yeah.
But I told him to do one, and that was basically it. So I
did. And you changed banks?
Oh, yeah, big time. And so I did get 75, but in the meantime, I then lost my house. Well, I did lose my house. So it's a knock-on effect. Because
it is.
You're not earning that much money. I mean, people say 11, it's a lot of money. But it's only for 2 years.
Yeah, look, it's a short career for a start, and it's all right earning that money, 1,100 quid a week, but like you said, for 2 years, you know, it's in the scheme of things, it's nothing, is it, really? You know, when you look at it over a normal person's career who earns, you know, 30 or 40 grand a year, whatever, you've got to make hay, haven't you, really, at that part of your career?
Well, of course you have, and like you say, when you finish the game, and like that, you say, God, your brains are in your feet, what do you do?
Well, you're 29 now. What do you do? You're not 29 now. You're 29 at that point. I know you went to play, obviously, part-time then at Wisbech. I believed you played with Jackie Gallagher, but you can't remember that. But he can. So I don't know who to believe. But what do you do when you know, that's all you've done is play football?
Well, that's it. So reinvent yourself. So I know what I'm good at.
Yeah.
Drinking, so I bought a pub.
The Heineken League.
The Heineken League. So I bought a pub and me and my wife had it for about 4 years. We did really well out of it.
Yeah. Where was that, Nick?
Market Bosworth.
Yeah. That's where you live now, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Lovely little village. We did well, ended up earning money on that. And then we bought a sandwich shop, which we've just got rid of.
Yeah.
And then I become a teacher.
All right.
I've become a PE teacher.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I was a teacher for 7 years.
Right.
And that was basically our football to death. I was manager of a non-league football team.
Oldby Town, was he?
Oldby Town, yeah.
You and Matt Elliott?
With Matt, my brother-in-law.
Yeah.
But he's no longer my brother-in-law now.
He's still your mate, though.
Oh, he's still my mate. God love him. I know. That's another
thing.
We can't go into that.
No.
If the wives are listening. But that was basically it. And me and Matt was managers of Oldby. And then I just had enough of football. As I said, football every day, coaching, overnight. We're never home, Saturdays, yeah. Do you know what I mean, for a lot of time. And I just packed it all in. And then, obviously, here I am today with my new job.
So what do you do now, Mick?
I work for Age UK Stairlifts Handicare in Kings Winford.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously we sell stairlifts, lifts through the roof.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've done that for 10 years.
And how difficult is the transition when you was a professional footballer, pretty much from when you left school to 29, how difficult was the transition then to running a pub, to running a cafe, to being a teacher? You know, did you find it hard, or did you seem to settle in?
No, obviously I lived up north, Sunderland, lovely place. But for 3 years, I was suicidal. It's horrible. You're just depressed. You don't know what to do. Your mates are still playing football, which is the worst scenario. You know, 6 weeks holidays. When they finished for the season, I honestly believed I was still playing football. It's just a mentality thing. And it took a long time to get over it. And then I think when I got 32 and a few players were finishing, it got better. Does that mean? Because you had your friends still playing, and it made it feel better.
It's actually, forgive me, it's a bit of a selfish attitude, but I can understand why, because all your mates are still playing, you know, and you just want to be out there with them, don't you?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, and then you look now, and we've only got one lad who I know, and that's Paul Cook.
Who's still in at a good level.
And a great lad. Do you know what I mean? So, obviously, you have known Stuart McCall or Bradford, who was in management.
Yeah, yeah.
I've known players, and I always look out for their teams.
Yeah.
And hope for they do well.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But, you know, I'm only down to Cookie now.
Yeah.
So, pull your finger out, son.
So, the Wolves All-Stars, you still come down and play, Mick. Like I said, I mean, how old are you now? 54?
54, yeah.
Still rolling back the years, Mick. You're looking good.
Thanks, Jason. Thanks very much. I love you.
And we've got the Gibraltar trip coming up soon.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. It should be nice getting a bit of sun. I'm injured because I played in football again Saturday. My calf went. But hopefully I'll be fit and ready for the Gibraltar. I'm looking really forward to it.
And obviously, one thing you touched upon earlier, the social aspect at Wolves, because I know the Wolves All-Stars, we've got a decent social aspect. And it's probably ingrained from the Tuesday Club. So, was you in that Tuesday Club? I mean, you must have been one of the founder members with Ali Robb, John Purdy.
I wasn't as bad as John Purdy. no, we like to drink on a Tuesday, but that stage, I think they make too much of it. I mean, I met my wife then, so obviously I didn't go out as much. But it were a good time when all the lads went out and bonded. Yeah. And I think every football team should have players living nearby.
Yeah.
You know, because it's wrong when, I mean, Wolves signed a few, you know, who did live in the area, and because they don't get the same, you know, when they're reading the newspapers, the Express and Star, whatever.
Yeah,
you know
what I mean?
I think, you know, it's valuable that they live in and they know how the fans react.
I think the good thing is that now at the club, a lot of the players are living nearer to the club. And I know in the first Premier League years, a lot of the players moved out to Sutton Coldfield, and I get it. But obviously, from your point of view, back then, you was all local, weren't you, to the club? And a lot of people made it their home as well, Wolverhampton. And long after their careers had finished, they still obviously lived in Wolverhampton. So, you know, it was important then having that sort of bond off the pitch. And
oh, yeah. I mean, you know, when I first moved, we stayed in Diggs, and then I moved in with John Purdy. Me and John lived together. That was really nice because we didn't drink a lot, you know, we watched a lot of football and analysed the games.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
And then obviously I met my wife, Bernadette, and then that's when we moved to Codsall. And obviously, you know, only in the house 7 months. And that obviously we've got, you know, that's what happened to us again. But that's what football, that's what it does, that's what it is. Unfortunately, in those days, we didn't earn the money. Nowadays, I don't think they're too bothered if they move, because they get lumps of money to go. But it's not the players' fault.
Of course it isn't.
You can't blame the players. Good luck to them. Do you know what I mean? But even if you're a multi-millionaire, don't ever forget where you come from. That's all I would say to people, you know, and don't look down on people.
Have you got any regrets from your career? Or because, sadly, it did end and it wasn't on your terms, and that must be as hard. You know, you're not calling a day, it's calling a day on you. Have you got any regrets on obviously, yes, the way it ended, but any decisions in your career that was...
Not the way it planned out, because if someone had said to me, because end of the day, anyone who played in the 80s are not financially, do you know what I mean, to retire. But if you said to me, I'd play at Wembley 3 times, I'd score at Wembley, I'd get a record for Wolves, 17-7, you know, if someone said that at 60, when I got released from Forest, you would have bit the hand off. My only regret probably... when I left Wolves a bit later on, I didn't commit really, but then I lost, fell out of love of the game. Do you know what I mean? And it's trying to. But when you finish, you realise what an idiot you've been.
Yeah.
But you know, unfortunately, it wasn't my choice to finish the way it happened. But I would just think I would have been a bit more, kept my mouth shut a bit more when I got a bit older.
Yeah.
Instead of having to go up managers, you know what I mean, and saying what I wanted, but. You know,
but that comes with experience, and Mick, that was obviously part of your game because you are vocal, so that was obviously one of your strengths as well. But sometimes it can play against you, can't it?
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, obviously, at Wolves, you had this, like I say, Graham Turner, I don't think anyone answered him back,
yeah.
But you know, that was Graham Turner. But I mean, as I said, the older you get, because you're 24, 25, you've got experience, you know, you're not going to be talked to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I have respect for players as well.
Of course.
You know what I mean?
Was you at Bradford City at the time of the fire, Mick?
I was, yeah. So it was... Unfortunately, that year we won the league, and they only had one substitute then. So I was that... Before the game, I was dropped. I had one sub, do you know what I mean? So it was still good to get in that team.
And you was dropped to the bench?
No.
Dropped from the squad?
Yeah.
Yes.
I was in the squad, but obviously we had to watch it in the stands, and obviously, you know, he didn't realise. And then half time went into the players' bar, which is not very big at all.
Yeah.
And we're having a drink, and that's when Terry Orff ran in, said there's a fire. Me and Terry Orff had to jump out the window. And that it was horrible. And we went to a pub up the road in our kits, well, not me and the kits, but the players in the kit, and we didn't really see it until the next day. Because if you looked at the calendar, the fire... You couldn't see it, you know, only on TV. So we didn't know the impact until the next day.
Because it wasn't like the social media is now, and you go on your phone.
Because at first you thought 2 were dead, 4 were dead, and then it was just getting bigger and bigger. You know, and when you seen it the next morning...
How old was you at that point, Mick?
18 or 19.
So what impact does that have on a young man who's, you know, making his way in the game, and it's not even about football, actually. What impact does that have on a 19-year-old lad who's just gone to his place of work, which is the truth? And
it does have an impact, but you know, it's times you look back and you think, God, how lucky, like you just said, to play football when those poor people have lost their lives, coming to watch football, coming to watch us, and they've lost their, you know, been a tragic accident. But it's hard because you have times when you go to clubs, and again, you've no one to talk to. You've got no one to talk to, well, especially my family, because my brother's emigrated to Australia. You know, you've got no one to talk to about football.
Yeah.
So you don't know, you know, am I doing the right decision? Am I making the wrong decision?
Yeah.
You've got to make every decision, you know.
On your own, really.
On your own, you know.
Did you know anyone that sadly passed away? Or know of anyone?
So yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because obviously, you've got to remember, I played for Bradford, non-league before Bradford took, you remember, before I went on trial at Bradford.
Yes.
So I mean, a lot of people's granddads and everything, it was sad. And then we went to the memorial about 2 weeks later at the church or whatever, and he was absolutely, you know, it was the worst thing I've ever been through in my life. And unfortunately, I moved on from there. I went to Sweden, didn't I? So got away from it.
Yeah.
Not so long after the fire, so he was away from Bradford. I was in Sweden, and then obviously back. But I mean, we still, when we go to Bradford, in fact, I got injured on Saturday playing in the fire. We played a charity game.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because obviously you don't forget the people who died.
Of course.
But another, you know, it's a horrendous, you know, time. But, you know, just got to...
I'd said that is Mick, actually, because it wasn't until we started speaking I didn't realise that you was there that day. You know, I didn't. I obviously knew you played for Bradford. And in my head then I was working out the dates. And I, yeah, very sad.
Well, worries, well, when we was apprentice, because it was all wooden, instead of... This is all apprentices. Instead of putting the plastic cups in a bag, because there was holes underneath the stadium where it would, you'd kick the plastic cups down.
Yeah.
So obviously what happened, one end of the stadium, someone's had a cig, thrown it underneath, not knowing. And by the time, nobody knew, because it got to the middle and they ruptured so quick.
And all the stands were wood then, weren't they? Yeah.
And the worst thing is they locked the gates at half time.
Yeah.
For people, you know, trying to sneak in. Now, those gates would have been open, there would have been hardly any deaths. So people were trapped in smoke at the top and they couldn't get out.
It's just horrendous, isn't it? You know, you think, and that 1985, it wasn't even that long ago. It's just really, really, it's just frightening, isn't it? And I know that obviously all the laws have changed now into, well, look, Wolves had to shut two stands because of it.
Yeah.
So you got to Wolves and there's only two stands open because of the laws, and rightly so. So, you know, just such a sad time.
Yeah. So I've had good times and bad times. Yeah. That's the saddest time in my life. Football.
Going back, Brian Clough. So you started at Forest. I mean, what was Brian like to work with, or did you see much of him?
I met him once.
Oh, really?
Yeah, him once. And the story, I don't know if you heard this. One of the apprentices, because they had telephones in the training rooms. So Brian Clough rang down and said, "Hey, young man, will you make me a cup of tea?" And young man went, "You know who's talking? You know who you're talking to?" He went, "No." I said, "Well, make it your fucking self."
Yeah.
And put the phone down.
So he didn't know who'd answer the phone.
And he come down the turning room and started laughing.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. But you didn't really see him. You just seen the, you know, I mean, Forest, we played every Saturday at Forest. You know, we used to come travel down from Bradford.
Yeah.
Every Saturday, so they had a good 2 years look at you. But as I said, up until 6 months before that, they was offering me an apprenticeship.
Yeah.
And again, they made a better choice, didn't they, than signing that.
But I think football's all about opinions as well, isn't it, Mick?
Of course it is. But having said that, you know, it makes you mature more. Being released, try to prove people wrong. I mean, a lot of lads, Wolves, best players at their age group, under 11s, under 12s, you know what I mean?
But yeah.
Then you know, it gets harder and harder because you're meeting players the same stature as you. You know, so it gets harder and harder. But under 11s, under 12s, you thought you were going to make it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you're scoring goals for fun. Obviously, it gets old. It gets harder as you get older.
How old was you when you first kicked a ball then, Mick?
I must have been 4.
And was it, not at that point, obviously, but as you getting older, 6, 7, obviously, it's the dream, isn't it? You want to be a footballer. And
it was, and then... Obviously, in Bradford, I was 8 years of age when I played at under-11s. Bradford,
right.
So I was playing 3 years above. And you imagine, I was only like mini-me.
Yeah.
I was small, do you know what I mean? But, and that was it. And then, obviously, it's people telling you, innit?
Yes.
People telling you, oh, he's going to be brilliant. And it doesn't work like that. So that's why my parents come and ask me, you know, for young kids. I'll say, well, that's for 50 grand. And then if he don't make it, he'll do it for his schooling. They won't dare ask. Why?
Yeah.
Because it's all about the parents talking about the kids. He's at Liverpool, he's at Man U. The chances of him making it is a millimetre. And I'm not being horrible to
the kids. Of course, of
course. I'm trying to get some money for the young lad.
Yeah.
So he can go on to, you know, university.
And that's the thing. And when you played, Mick, there wasn't, you know, I don't think there was any education programmes in place, etc. Now there is. Now it's obviously regulated. If a player doesn't make it, he's normally got a pathway to do something else. But with you, what could have happened is you get kicked out the door by Brian Clough and that is the end.
Oh, but it's like when Notts Forest come and sign me. Had Jeff Stubbs, he come and sign me. He said I'd be the next George Best. Now I've got my mum, who's Irish, God love her, and they're telling me that. So obviously I'm going to think I'm a professional footballer. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's implemented into your brain that I'm the best. So like I said to you earlier, your schoolwork goes downhill.
Yeah.
But hey, as soon as you get released at 16, you soon got to pick your ideas up.
Yeah.
That was basically it. But one little story was the best one. When I went to Huddersfield Town, Owen Hand, so we had pre-match meal.
Yeah.
So he called me and, Mike, I've come in here. I said, do you know who you remind me of, son? I went, he said, you remind me of the great Johnny Giles. I went, unbelievable. And, 2 o'clock.
What a comparison.
The, 2 o'clock, he put the team. I wasn't even on the bench. So he told me that at 12 o'clock, he's come and picked the team and the subs. I'm not even sub.
Yeah.
So I think, is he?
Yeah, is he having me on
that
here?
That was the funniest thing.
But from you, Mick, you've lived the dream. Did you love your career? Is there?
Yeah, loved everything. Obviously, I wish it would have gone on longer.
Yeah.
That's, you know, but again, it can't be greedy because, you know, everybody could wish they could have done better, this, done that. But, you know, if someone had said that at 16, played for my home team club as well.
Yeah.
Bradford, you know, everybody loves playing for the home team club.
Yeah.
Then going to Wolves. Just the last few clubs, you know.
Scoring at Wembley.
7 goals in 7 games, which, touch wood, still remains. And that's basically, and playing for the Wolves Stars, which is great. You're giving something back.
Yeah.
And you're meeting some of the ex-players and all that. And then we're all getting together, you know, having a couple of drinks.
And Mick, you come down. That is a hell of a commitment as well. You come all the way from Market Bosworth to play. You're not coming just down the road. So that is a big commitment. So on behalf of the Wolves All Stars, hey, we want to thank you. But Mick, great career, great stories. That record, that 7-7. I think it's going to be years, if not, you know, will it ever be beaten? But you know, you are now etched in Wolves history. Over 100 games, 13 goals. Amazing, Mickey. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jason.
Cheers, Mickey.